Okay, let's start with the opening prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master, Dearest Mother, Beloved David, Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king, reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Oh. Oh. Peace. Bliss. Amen. Do a short meditation. One thing I've noticed with the chants that we generally listen to and the Christian ones, the difference is they get more, they get louder towards the end and become more rajasic. Whereas the chants that we normally listen to are, they're more where if certainly the music fades down to bring you to a meditational state. It's certainly something we prefer. There is we see this with lots of new people on the path. They're very raucous, and they really want to express it. They want it to be everyone to be seen, and not also, but also to spread the message of love and whatever they're going through. It's a positive message that's trying to be given. There's a talk show host named Dennis Prager, who's a Jew, and he says, you know, I'm around a lot of Christians, and when they say they hope I come to Christ, he says, I don't take it as most Jews do. I don't take it negatively at all. I know it's meant well. Why would I, after all the horrible things that have happened to the Jews in history, when someone is trying to do you good, do good for you, and to bring you to something they think is better, how can you be opposed to that? You can just intellectually accept it and say, fine, and explain it to them intellectually, I should say, that this is just not the person that we saw as our Messiah. So, and that's nothing wrong with that. That you can be so easily offended about everything. And he's not. He's quite a wonderful, wonderful soul.
Interesting that you just said that, Larry, because there's a particular resident that's Jewish. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I work at Christian Healthcare Center, and there's a particular staff member who's pretty focused on that resident for, you know, wanting to get her to Save her everlasting soul. Exactly. And this, yeah, the particular staff member has a pretty, you know, rigid view of, and she has a particular scripture that she quoted to me several months back. And, you know, she's not going to convert this lady any more than,
well, it's offensive,
she's going to change someone from being black to white, you know, but, and the lady has dementia, and, you know, it's just, to me, I get irritated by it, but course, I should just let it.
No, I think you may have a responsibility there that I can't advise that, but I'm just saying that, you know, people, it's kind of not predatory, but it's kind of an abusive thing to do if it's not, again, if she's not aware that she's doing it more than once, you know, but if you keep pestering people, that's just not good about regardless.
It's more like she's trying to extra specially befriend her because she's not at the end of life, but she's, you know, everyone in there is at the end of life, and she's just ultra focused on this lady. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oy vey. You know, it just, I think she should just leave her alone.
Yeah. But, oh, well, human beings.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read, just a little short thing, and it'll make sense in a while. What did I do with it? There it is. I need like 3 or 4 monitors so I can just place things in front and not have to go looking underneath. This is a reading from John, Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 14. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. We beheld his glory, the glory of, as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him and cried, saying, this was he of whom I spake. He that cometh after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. And of his fullness have all we received, and grace for grace. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. No man hath seen God at any time, the only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. And this is the record of John. When the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, who art thou? And he confessed, Where did he confess? But I am not the Christ. This is John. And they asked him, what then? Art thou Elias? And he saith, I am not. Art thou the prophet? And he answered, no. Then they said unto him, who art thou? That we may give an answer to them that sent us. What sayest thou of thyself? He said, I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness. Make straight the way of the Lord, as said the prophet Esaias. And they which were sent were of the Pharisees, and asked him, and said unto him, why baptizest thou then, if thou be not the Christ, that Christ, nor Elias, neither that prophet? John answered them, saying, I baptize with water, but there standeth one among you, whom ye know not. He it is who cometh after me, who coming after me is preferred before me, whose shoes latchet I am not worthy to unloose. And then I'm going to play a little bit of Jesus of Nazareth, because we all love it so much anyway. So we will do a window. Oh, there it is. Okay, and share the sound. So we'll see if this will play. Can you all see the video? Okay.
Yes, Mary, I can see
it. I have seen. Help me to be strong.
Be strong. Baptism from you. And yet you come to me. Let it be so. We must fulfill all righteousness. Eternal Father, I hear your voice. This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased.
Such a beautiful scene. We were so thrilled when that series first came out. I remember the Wednesday after Mother was talking about, after the first, it was done in two parts, I think, Palm Sunday and Easter. But yeah, Mother said that though it was stiff and formal in some respects, it was reflective, very reflective of how the Bible is written. And she liked it a lot. She really did. She thought he had done something grand, something great. There's still nothing to compare to it. And the actors they got, my gosh, just amazing. They got every single major actor of the day to play some part in England and in America. So Mother's teachings around John the Baptist differ from some of the esoteric teachings. I don't know enough of all of them, certainly, to know how hers differs. But I've read enough to know that some people see it differently. Mother said that John the Baptist is that intuitional part of our makeup, call it, and it is located in a bodily part of the solar plexus, which is sometimes called the second brain. And that the thing about intuition is that it comes and goes. And the other connection that Mother always insisted on was that John the Baptist is the moon, is represented, or the moon is representing John the Baptist, or vice versa. But in the story, John the Baptist represents intuition, and intuition is often seen as the moon, which is. The moon is full, and it's a new moon, which is completely dark, in which you have no intuition, but you'll have times of great intuition, and you learn to rely on it, and then it becomes inconstant. So you have to be aware of it and not to put too much into it. That's why it's so important to test spirits. But that the John the Baptist is that voice crying in the wilderness. It's trying to get through. And it comes before Jesus. But as I read, and I think he said, you come before, he comes before me. I think I read that. And of course, in the teachings, Jesus is coming before him. In birth, we think, I'm pretty sure that's true, and that it's clear in most of the biblical passages or the Gospels, that John the Baptist came first. But in precedence, he recognized who was the greater or who was the true source of the light that the sun shone upon the moon. All of the light that comes from the moon comes from the sun. And so when the sun comes, then we don't need a candle. We don't need a moon to brighten the ground. And the other teachings that Mother had around that was the solar plexus gets stimulated and gets as the energy moves, the kundalini energy moves up the spine and comes close to the heart center. It stimulates the solar plexus greatly. It's extremely painful sometimes. And it can be literally unlike related to the heart pain. It's to come through breaking through the heart center, what is called cutting the Gordian knot. And the knot is contained, made up of two strands, one vertical and one horizontal. And we can think about the arms coming together, crossing there, and then the vertical energy of the kundalini coming up. And it foreshadows the cross of Golgotha, but it is a cross of its own also. So I have one of the things that Mother's a little bit difficult to understand, and we all struggle with it. So I want to share a page. I hope you can all see it. I'm going to just shrink out this other page. See, I got so many windows open. Ridiculous. Okay, can you see? It says God, man, the Word made flesh. Everyone, God. So now this is Jill with us tonight? I didn't see her. No. Poor Jill. Her mother's soon to leave the body. She's thinking anyway. She's in hospice care, so she's pretty involved with her mother's passing. Her mother's going through some very interesting passing. issues. I mean, she's been wanting to meditate, never before. She's raised Catholic, so she has a lot of Catholic notions. But the idea of meditation is sometimes included in the Catholic teaching, but sometimes resisted too. So, and she's been having also, I think it's probably true, and Jill believes so, that it's some kind of understanding of what her life was for and what her life, what she was doing here in this life, and how raising her kids. She was not an easy person to live with, Jill says, but she was also very much playing a role there, and that God, she feels, her mother does, that God is directed her then and is directing her now. And she says it's a change in her character. So, you know, she's got some dementia, memory issues and stuff like that could be related. But it's really, really interesting to watch souls as they pass and to hear stories about them like this. It's really, really interesting. I recognize that we are transitioning from one phase to another, but as often is the case, the transition is the hard part. Someone said the opposite of death is birth, not life. I mean, there's no opposite to life really understood. There's only life. It is what we have, that spark of God in us. And that the birth is a transition, and so is death a transition. So this book was made aware to me. I picked up a copy of this book called, and I was looking for it earlier, and I couldn't find it over at the other house. It's called The Himalayan Mountain Masters and the Cosmic Ladder of Consciousness. And so in there, I saw this crazy stuff from this George Carey, you see in the, it's by Dr. George W. Carey and Inez Eudora Perry. And talk about the Joseph and Mary gland. And it's so fascinating. So I'll bring you forward to the marvelous story of Joseph and Mary and page 19. And so there's a John the Baptist, and I'd like to read some of that, and then the optic thalamus in the central or single eye. They're very short. But they're really fascinating to see what mother was, had she read this? I know I brought this up before, but it's very interesting to think that mother, I wasn't paying attention, that mother may have read this. Now, this was published in 1920, this book. And it's talking about things that maybe were Theosophical Society and some of the other esoteric teachings. And so let me just read a little bit here and show you how similar what mother's teachings were. And here again, we don't know. She probably did read this stuff, and she probably had more than one source. I found more than one source. There's some fascinating YouTube videos that Joshua has sent me that are everyone, and even what's his name who played in Bruce Almighty.
Jim Carrey.
Thank you. Jim Carrey's been, he has a video talking about the Joseph and Mary gland and going into the land of milk and honey. And so he's obviously been studying or, you know, being exposed to some of this. And there's a lot of it happening right now, as I've said before, with Tim Freak is his name, F-R-E-K-E. He's got some videos that are very interesting and some writings in a book that I've read. We're on the Jesus Mysteries, but it is.
Larry, I was just, I may have the wrong impression, but my impression was that Mother didn't read these things until after she'd gone through her experiences, and she found it very interesting that it then, in another way, kind of verified.
Confirmed, yeah. We don't know which way it happened. It's very likely she read it, and it's very likely she had it, that, but it's so similar that it makes you wonder if what she... I want to give the benefit of the doubt to dates that this is written and probably much preceded this, that she read this someplace or things like it. And as she worked with this in her own experiences, she was working on this in the 50s, middle 50s, before she went to India. So she had these clearly in her mind. And she was also, she taught at Unity. She was in the Unity Church here in Seattle. So I don't know, and I don't think it's anything to get too worked up about in the future for any of us to defend one way or the other what Mother was teaching. These are her own experiences. Many others have had it, not just this author. And we don't even know where he's getting some of this.
Wasn't he a disciple of Masters?
George Carey?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I have no idea. 1920s, possibly he was, because he certainly was living at the same time and dealing with some of these same subjects of the esoteric.
Yeah.
So on either side of the thalamus, in the head is a gland known in physiology as the pineal on the posterior and the pituitary on the anterior side, the forward side of the thalamus. The pineal is cone-shaped and secretes a yellow or golden fluid. The pituitary body opposite it is ellipsoid in shape and contains a whitish secretion like milk. The fluids that are found in both these bodies come from the same source, namely the claustrum, which means barrier or cloister, and is referred to as cloister for the very good reason that a precious and holy thing is secreted or secluded there. Saint Claus or Santa Claus is another term for this precious fluid, which is indeed a holy gift in the body of each one of us. So, now this is also relates to the baptism too. St. John is sometimes referred to as an oil, and that he is representing this claustrum. And the baptism occurs at that level. Again, I'm not trying to make, you know, a PhD out of this, but I think it's important to go through these things to understand Mother's teachings. I read from this because we already know, we've heard Mother talk about this, most of us have, and I'd like you to see that this is something that Mother went to some trouble to bring forth. Papa would say, don't worry about it, just repeat the name of God. And Master would ask this to do meditation. And all of those are fine, but our guru line has a teaching of this type. And so in order to follow as good disciples, we have to at least be knowledgeable of it and be respectful of it, whether we understand it or not. Doesn't mean we have to teach it either. But it does mean that it's going to be somehow involved in future as we proceed along in this pioneering time. It will become important that Mother taught this. I'll give you an example. Mother taught not to have an ashram, that for herself. And she said, and yet David and I both talked about getting property. And also David actually looked for property at one time. So it is that each person makes up their mind for themselves. And Mother was not saying, don't you do that. Something she did tell us specifically. But these things that Mother was talking about, Sri Yukteswar does, he gives teachings on astrological aspects of the yugas that's quite shocking and quite different than all of the teachings from India. The standard orthodox teachings of India are very different than the yugas. And yet they're quoting the same scriptures for the yugas, description of the yugas. But why did he then go into that field when he was fully realized? We just simply don't know. But so as each person is drawn to it, they can go into it. I'm sure you'll sometimes find yourself unable to stop yourself from getting and studying it. And does it represent slowing down your own advancement? These are what we all discussed. We don't know. There are no rules on this. We can say, well, Mother just did this after she was realized. I don't think so. I think she was dealing with this all the way through. For some reason, God wanted her to have this clear experiences around this, and God wanted her to teach it. So out of respect for that only, I'm not trying to promote this that we all have to get degrees in this, but that we at least have a little bit of understanding of it, and to recognize that it is something to do with the kundalini, with the transformation that occurs in the chemistry of the body and the nervous system in the body. And really, we're relying on that. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
I was going to just affirm that Mother did value this book and these teachings because we have it in her library in the old typed on onion paper from the 1960s that were in with her old transcripts that you found out it was S.E. Hansen that typed them, but those really old early 1960s ones. And she has a few
transcripts. So I'm clear. That's onion skin, but it's a transcript of a mother's talk.
No. In those binders that we have of those old transcripts, there are a few pages typed.
Okay, I see.
Typed pages, and it's this book, like word for word. It's this book.
It is this book by Carrie?
Uh huh. Yeah, it's like it's excerpts from this. So
she's using it to confirm. Yeah, she confirmed it. She's using it to confirm her own experiences. Yeah, interesting. Well, that's very good. Thank you. We should probably make those available on the website.
Yeah, they're in OneNote, I think.
Are they? Yeah. We should get those. I'll put them into a PDF. If they're in OneNote, I'll bring them out and make a PDF. I think this stuff should be made available to people. So much in Mother's files. It's very valuable for the right person who's interested in it to study it and have it available. Thank you.
Hey, Larry, what do you think of the idea of putting this this book on the website as a reference resource?
Yes, it's going to be attached to this file. When it's in the minister's page, you'll be able to get the PDF and download it from this talk.
Oh, okay, good. You're going to post it on there?
Yeah, most of the things like this that I pull up, I want to make available too.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
Mother's Holy Science. We'll do David's Holy Science, and it will be put up there too. I think I wonder if they're not already both of them in the What's New section. What I do like about the new website is it's a little more accessible and logically laid out and more modern. So it's quite, we've got some interesting improvements that we're going to all benefit from. So now Mother says that this land of milk and honey that's talked about in the Old Testament, that's made me certain that Moses attained the same state as Jesus. I know that people talk about foreshadowing in Moses. I think that the Egyptians very likely had masters at Jesus' level, and that other, and of course in India, this is something that Christians just can't. I mean, it's almost as though they are always competitive with one, group is always competitive with another, and ours is, but my priest is, or bishop is greater than your bishop. But it is clear that when he's going to the land of milk and honey, and the things that Moses goes through, and Moses dies before he even gets himself, he himself dies like Jesus. There's actually a death, similar death experience. Really fascinating. And that the body that he represents doesn't make it into heaven, as into Canaan, into the land of milk and honey. Of course he can't. That's the
Does Moses represent the human consciousness?
I think he represents the human, the man, yes.
He dies before he reaches,
Very significant, exactly.
Yeah.
So what dies with Jesus? His body dies. And does Moses represent the body? I've always been wary of making direct comparisons of that type, but there are some. There's clearly a similar story being told here. So, Jesus ends up in Golgotha, which is the hill of the skull, And then the Joseph and Mary gland in the Jesus story have already been talked about.
What this story is telling us is that when the secretions from these two sacred cloisters come together, they produce a Christ child.
Produce a seed.
Right. And so the allegory there in the Bible would be, once that land of milk and honey is reached, that's when the Christ child is born. So Moses never made it there. So, Moses is a good guide through the desert towards the land of milk and honey, just like our intuition would be, right? But once the Christ is born, once the sun comes out, there's no need for that moon anymore.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
And so I've never thought of it that way, Larry, but that's a really great parallel you've just drawn between the Old Testament and the New Testament. I never thought of that, but I think you might be right there that Moses, that human consciousness falls away once the land of milk and honey is reached. He never sees that.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the ability to see it. He doesn't have the consciousness to see it.
Right, right.
That's fascinating.
And yet in Moses' story, he sees God's face. And Moses' face itself is, that's why these stories are, they're difficult to understand without this inner experience that Mother brings to us. Where if she can see, oh, this happened to me this way, and now I see the connection. The idea that you can study this intellectually, which we are doing here, I admit, but at the same time, to be ready for the experience, just in preparation, or at least in acknowledgement that this is a legitimate part of Mother's teaching, a legitimate part of the spiritual path for this. I think, you know, in the future, I tell you, it came so strongly to me the other day that Mother's, what's different about Mother, I think I was talking to Zach, and then saying what's different about Mother is that her message is more for the Christians. You know, Masters and Kriyanandas and many of the Eastern Masters, they want to teach us how to be a better yogi and how to be a better Indian, and they want to give you an Indian name, and isn't that better, and everything like that. Of course, there's in India, the Christians all have, they live there, who are Indians, all have Joseph and Western names, so it goes both ways. But Mother never did that. She did give her daughter the name Anandamata, and she did give David Yogacharya. But generally, she kept everything. You know, she certainly, even if people had asked Mother for names that I'd never heard, I'd be interested to know. So many questions to Mother. It'd be nice to have answered nowadays. But I think she'd say no. No, it's not part of your spiritual path. And then when Kate asked about it, not wanting one, but just musingly asked Swamiji, he said, not necessary. Correct, Kate?
About the name, that's, yeah, when
yeah,
I...
Yeah, about getting an old Western...
Yeah, somebody come in and gotten a spiritual name from him, and I was sitting there in the room, and I said, you know, is it a good idea to get a spiritual name, Swamiji? And you know, is it a good idea for somebody? Should I? Not necessary. It is low.
Those who've been around them can imagine that so very clearly. Yeah.
I took that I didn't, I shouldn't. I just want a little bit more clarification on that Moses, because it wasn't that long ago that I read Exodus. If Moses is representing, and this is kind of new to me thinking about Moses too, but if Moses is the body as is Jesus, the Son of Man, and Jesus, the Son of Man, goes through the crucifixion and Moses goes through that time in the desert, he knows that he is projecting into that promised land. It is there. It is not necessary for that body of his to go there, because
he has
already fulfilled his role in a sense. Yeah, the body has already done what it needed to do. So
right. If
he was a fully realized person, it's possible that the body doesn't go any farther. The body doesn't need to.
I think what Moses represented is not so much the body. He represented the law.
Well, Mother used to say that all the time. Mm-hmm. You both were bringing up the point of Moses.
He represents the law. And the law in this case is righteous living. So he represented, in lieu of divine guidance, you have righteous living. So you have righteous living until your consciousness rises to the point where then you're guided by the divine. And that's why God realized masters can sometimes break the rules, right? Or the rules that we think of, is because they have divine guidance. But up until then, until we have that realization, we have the law to guide us. And so I think Moses represents that consciousness. And then of course, once the children enter the land of milk and honey, they have divine guidance.
The thing, though, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, those who are biblical scholars, but Mother used to say Moses represents the law, but at the same time, he gets direct communication with God. God, he goes up in the mountain, Mother always said, the mother says that's the mountain of his own being. He talks to God. He gets that direct revelation from God. It's not just because he's righteously living. It's he has that direct meeting with God, and he comes down and he tells everybody the message.
Hey, we do the same thing, right? We sit down in meditation and we go up the mountain. We rise up in that consciousness and we get insights. You know, we get truths revealed. We get incredible things. I've never actually come out of consciousness holding two stone tablets, but you know, the path is still young here. But you know, we go up and we come down. But I think once you enter that land of milk and honey, so to speak, that's what Mother refers to as going over the top. So I think you can certainly have revelations and you can see divine truth. I think we've actually, most of us here that have been on this path a while have experienced that. In fact, it's actually kind of frustrating because sometimes you get lifted up, right? And you get exposed to divine truth and you go, oh my gosh, you know, this is magnificent. And you come back down, and you, when you come back down the mountain, you know, it's kind of like it starts getting a little foggy, and you start, and by the time you get all the way back down to regular consciousness, you're going, now, what was that divine truth again? It's right on the tip of my tongue. You know, I knew, what was that? You know, that incredible revelation that I just had. So that's, I think, part of the process, you know, as we go up and down for a while.
So those tablets represent us insisting we're going to remember this. You know, we're trying to make it clear. So I had an experience with Mother where she told me something, and she repeated it several times, very forcefully. I don't want this misunderstood. And it was really I got it. You know, I felt that way. This happens in sometimes milliseconds. But the idea that I was being told again was so startling. But it really chipped it into the stone. It really brought it into my consciousness sufficient to pass it on. So that it could be.
Because if Moses represents, if each of these representations are different things than ourselves, and Moses goes up in the mountain and he's lifted up and he gets revelation from God and he comes back down and all the people are worshiping other gods again. I mean, those are all within himself and within ourselves as well. So in that respect, as you were saying, Peter, you go up and then you come back down and worship the golden calf, you know, and
or you complain that you complain to other aspects of yourself that want to.
Right. What are you doing?
You're not coming down
on the calf again.
The lesson isn't that we're going to come down out of meditation and tell everybody to be a better Christian, make sure they go to church. It was to inform ourselves.
Yeah. Right. It's like those aspects in you that want to go out and have a hamburger, Larry. I mean, those guys, a collection of barbarians.
Not worshiping the calf, but eating the calf.
Exactly. My point. Who ate the golden calf that was sitting here just a minute ago?
Right. But there's some temptation, and that golden calf is actually a very fascinating thing. I've heard it explained that it represents money, of course, but it represents this life that they lived before. A lot of the people who came with Moses weren't Jews. They were brought out, and it says in the Bible that there was a lot of the Jews came, of course, but I believe the majority of them were not Jews, and they needed the 40. This is one explanation for why the 40 years in the desert. Now, Jesus was out in the desert for 40 days. He was a little faster learner, evidently, but it's really, I mean, and that calf represented, evidently, it was very common to have something physical like that to worship. And to put, and you see it in India, you see things being put down. And some levels of people understand it perfectly, that it's only to bring our mind to that one-pointedness. You know, since we're on that subject, and it's such a fascinating subject, and God's reminding me of it so much lately, the Vivekananda was in the West, and people were complaining to him about the worship of idols and stuff like that in India. He said, look, there's different levels of people, and some people understand that it's representational to bring about within your own mind memory of and focus on. That's what we're given to do, to remember God. And other people don't can't understand it, but at least they have something to cling to. It does bring them to a higher state. It is good for them. And they said, well, it just, it seems so silly just to have an image. He says, let me do something here. So he gets a picture of someone's family member, I think, maybe a president or some, or pope or whatever, but he gets a physical picture of somebody. He puts it on the floor and he says, step on that. And now the person whose picture it was, he says, oh, no, that's, I'm not going to do that. It's very disrespectful. Disrespectful to what? It's just a picture. It's just ink. It's a piece of paper with ink on it. And you're afraid? He says, this is how you have to understand what's going on here. These images are extremely powerful. And this is a great demonstration of it. You see, these things are very powerful. But we're taught, I always say, we're taught we have to give up that connection. So a lot of people say, well, I'll just give up. I'll give it up now. I'll give up any attachment to the guru, for instance. Well, there's a point where you need the guru. So maybe you shouldn't just jump to the fact that you think you have a PhD. Maybe you ought to go through learning all the things to get there for the PhD. And so he really, Vivekananda was such a brilliant mind and such a brilliant way to teach that. Anyway, getting a far field here. So this is, I'll send this PDF out and there'll be a link to get it if you're interested. There's a lot of stuff in here, esoterica, that's somewhat difficult to fully understand. And the table of contents alone is fascinating read because of all the stuff. So we'll go to page 61 here. Okay. John, or Ionas, however you pronounce that in Greek, is the ointment oil that flows down the spinal cord from the reservoir of God's substance in the upper brain, the most high, the heaved up place, the heaven within. We know that we have in heaven a more enduring substance, says Paul. The mysterious circumstances connected with the Bible story of John the Baptist and the information given in Smith's Bible Dictionary prove the holy divine origin of that which was called John, but which means oil in Greek. John's father was said to be a priest of Abijah or Abijah. This latter in Hebrew means whose father is Jehovah. Jehovah is the upper brain, the most high, the crystalline dew referred to in medieval Hebrew. Before the oil is raised by the seed, thus giving one-tenth to the Lord, it is called natural or wild, not cultivated, like wildflowers, wild honey. So John was a wild man, a native, a parable, most certainly. His food was locust and wild honey. The pineal gland and the pituitary gland secrete fluids called milk and honey in the scriptures. Locust means destructive, devour, or glutton. Now, that's what Mother says. And so I was interested to hear how she described it. Just recently, we heard her talk about that in one of the talks. And from Deuteronomy, we have, all thy tree of life and fruit seed, shall the locust consume. And then it's defined as sex desire. All thy tree of life and fruit seed shall the locust consume. The reader will please remember that the Bible is secret doctrine, or that which is within and not without. History is record of outward things. John, the natural man, was an eater of the fruit of the tree of life with a girdle of camel's hair. And again, he goes into areas I'm not familiar with at all. And he, also is really into numerology, so third letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which pertains to the external male organ. But John, like the prodigal son, changed his mind and is made to say, one cometh after me to get me, the latchet of whose feet I am not worthy to unloose. So some of this stuff Mother didn't pass on or didn't believe in. And then, so the idea that John is a something upon which, and he's associated with water and flowing water in the movement of the circuit of Galilee, where he's on the River Jordan, isn't he? That's the river that feeds the Sea of Galilee. I hope I'm right about that. And then we have, this is on page 75. Oh, here's 71. So I'll try not to make this too long, but it's interesting just to see the similarities to what Mother was teaching and how this is something clear back in 1920 being discovered. There's no doubt this is being discovered. It seems to be a universal aspect. The thalamus, within which is the optic or eye, is the great ganglion of the interbrain. It is called the bed or chamber. It projects backward over the midbrain. Laterally, it rests against the superior lamina of the internal capsule, which separates it from the lentiform nucleus. Well, that's really helpful. It says it's 4 meters, it's about 4 centimeters, or about 1.5 inches in length and 2.5 or 1 inch in width. It has an anterior and posterior proximity and 4 surfaces. The posterior surface of the midbrain, though free, let's see if we can get on to the other. All of the above is taken from Santi's Anatomy of the Brain and Spinal Cord. So he's a doctor, and there must be some things that these things were all named. What he's doing is bringing forth teachings that he's learned of the East, or at least the higher teachings from the Christian world. The pineal, so let me see, that was the posterior. Oh, that's the optic. So the ancients from time immemorial have considered the pine tree as the most sacred of all trees. The pineal gland, or corpus pineali, is shaped like the pine cone, and the ancient physiologists who gave it its name must assuredly have understood its great esoteric function. It is 1/4 inch high, 6 millimeters, and 4 millimeters, 0.17 inches in diameter, joined to the roof of the third ventricle by a flattened stalk, the habenula. It is also called epiphysis and conarium, small and reddish in the size of a pea. Now, it is true that in the Vatican, there is a huge, big pine cone. Another odd thing about pine pollen is that people never have trouble with it being, or not as much trouble with it being allergic to it. It has similar, weird, this is what I've read, similarities to humans' DNA. Some of the DNA looks like human DNA. And it's very good to take some kind of a pine pollen extract, especially for men. Don't know about the pituitary body, if there's anything there we can talk about. But I'm just going to leave this here because it gets to, well, he does say, the pineal gland is the male spiritual organ, the electric body, otherwise called Joseph in Bible terminology. The father of Jesus, the male element in the seed, the source of the seed. To it also the seed, or Jesus, the Son, returns after his work is done. Joseph of Arimathea receives the body of Jesus and lays it in his own rock-hewn tomb, wherein no man was ever laid before. The pineal gland becomes hard like a rock when the brain sand, the saved seed, is furnished it. When no material is being furnished in tithes to the brain, the pineal body is flabby and pasty. So, again, that's mostly just I'm trying to draw your attention to these things, and you can read more about it. And there's a lot here compared closely with Mother's teachings too. And nobody has to be perfect and understand everything about this. Whether Mother's more up to date in this understanding of the brain chemistry and the brain, how it works in the physical sense, she's identifying areas that were critical to the spiritual development of the human being. This is what one of the reasons for being here. It's the ultimate salvation by which we never have to come back here again. It's the thing that breaks the lock for the lifetimes, the circle of lifetimes, the cycle of lifetimes. The central eye, and the lamp thereof is the Lamb. They're in Revelations. The optic thalamus, the central eye in the center of the head, is called both lamp and lamb, PNB. The thalamus is a chamber, is a mass of gray matter at the base of the cerebrum, projecting into it, into and bounding the third ventricle. So we go into a bunch of other things here. And so there's a lot here. I need to I've got a number of books to read on diseases, mysteries, and stuff, mostly just to be conversant in it, not to be an expert, but to be conversant in it. We can give Mother, there may well be someone who goes through this in our group, and having some kind of respect for it and knowledge about it is all I'm trying to do, is to understand Mother.
In that page that you were just reading on, a little bit further down, it was really interesting. It talked about the optic thalamus gland being the light of truth, and that everything that we see with our physical eyes is a reflection, and that is the true light of truth, what you see through the spiritual eye. And they mentioned an interesting thing that people do is that sometimes when we're trying to discern the truth, you know, we put our hand over our eyes and say, yeah, oh, let me see. And we close our eyes. And that's an effort to go to that interior eye. And then oftentimes people go, oh, yes, now I see. Now, oh, I see now the truth of it.
Well, we often do close our eyes, don't we, to remember what was that? Yeah.
Or look up, like you say. Yeah, exactly.
Well, David said, you know, he studied neuro-linguistic programming, or at least neuro-linguistics. And there's evidently, when you're trying to ascertain or access certain memory, we'll look one direction if it's heart-based, and another direction if it's fact-based. And, you know, like he, the classic example David always gave was that you ask someone about their mother, and they'll say, well, how is she? And you'll look, I believe, down, but it may be one direction. It's all possibilities, down, straight, down, left, right, and then up, left, right. All those things mean different things, and it seems to be universal in our neurology or our nervous system.
Is that accessing different parts of your brain? Is that what you're doing?
It evidently has, and your eyes reflect everything. You know, they seem to be involved in, there's so much energy given to the visual cortex. It's huge. It's the biggest part of the use of the brain. And you can see why deaf people or blind people, you know, hear so well. They have a lot of real estate given over to the use of hearing, because they don't see.
That makes sense.
Final thing I wanted to mention is I did read about the pineal gland. Evidently, the stimulation from the pineal gland is very high when you close your eyes. Evidently, when you're in light, light will go through into your eyes and to the pineal gland. And the pineal gland is used to measure out the day, to do to secrete melatonin. And it almost has like one function, which is to set the biorhythms of the day. And the pituitary gland handles all the other, or at least it influences all the other endocrinal systems in the body, which is the mother, you know, it's the female. It's busy taking care of all the things in the world. And the pineal is just focused on the, in this way, every person has a male and female aspect to them. And we can access, and that's why some people naturally, of course, if it's in a previous incarnation, they were male and they're female this time, or vice versa. You're going to already have better use of those things, or be familiar with the use of those things. Seems like that's going to direct a lot of the, describe lots of things. And this is what Mother taught about homosexual being a real situation, and that you transfer back and forth and during these first transitions from one to the other. Because we have male and female within us. Very fascinating. But to think that the eyes actually feed directly into the pineal gland is really, really interesting. Yeah.
Hey, Larry, I know you probably mentioned this, but already, but where did you find this old book from 1920? How did you come across that?
Jill found it. It's a strange story. So I gave Mother this book called The Himalayan Mountain Masters, in which he, a short introduction chapter, mentions Robert Carey and all of this pituitary, pineal, Land of Milk and Honey, Joseph and Mary. I mean, it's a short little thing. It's pulled out of this book here. And Jill went online and found a copy of it. Now, she had a friend who was a relative of the yogi Wasson, who was, so the book that I had, and I gave to Mother, but I found out she, in her library, she already had a copy. So he had actually two copies. And that it was this, I found in her library that she had knowledge of this person, but that the Yogi Wasson's granddaughter, I believe, or maybe her granddaughter's, it may have been her husband's family that was associated with Yogi Wasson. So she wanted to meet me and I wanted to meet her. Jill arranged that. I met her up at Jill's place. So in the course of that, you know, there wasn't, we didn't have much to talk about. She was just a normal person and didn't know what in the world, other than she knew about these things, you know, that he was involved in.
A normal person.
Yeah. And which we all were, by the way. The people that met, we were all normal. I just forgot to point that out. But fairly normal. But you could see that, you know, dealing with this kind of stuff, she was respectful, though. I mean, she really was curious because of a family connection. So then Jill knew a little more about it, and Robert Carey started looking, and she found this PDF document of this book. And then I compared it to, when I first got this, I compared it to the Yogi Wasson book, and you can, it's literally taken right out of this book. So nice to it's nice to have the whole thing.
Well, some of those things in this little book, I mean, I've just heard Mother say directly in talks.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
So she was obviously influenced by this book and of course, her own internal.
Obviously influenced by, we don't know which chicken or egg happened, but she was influenced by the truth of this. And I would, if I had to guess, I would say she read about it first and then she confirmed it through experiences. After all, she read the Bible and had that confirmed through experiences. But it also clarified, she had clarity from it. Whereas if it becomes intellectual exercise, you will make mistakes. Direct connection to God on this can help a great deal. And Mother taught only a subset of this, and she didn't really want us to get deeply involved in this. And I don't mean to, that's why I'm saying it. You don't have to spend, there's no test on this. We're not going to be tested. So, but it is to introduce the topic and to, Mother taught about it a lot. It's important to her, so it's important to us. It's that simple. And at least be respectful. Just like disciples of Sri Yogi's word, they didn't have to all be astrologers, but they knew he of the power of that he had, or that he, the knowledge he had was real. I mean, he used astrology in some of his understandings because he could see the reflection in the world outside. He could see the stars reflecting what is going on here and guiding things. I am of a scientific bent to believe that light is instantaneous. So there's a long story about that. But the idea of the speed of light goes away once you understand how this actually works. And that fits in very well with the idea that astrology reflects what's up there now on all the stars are affecting us now. And that still, they're affecting us, is that the right word? But they are reflecting the state of the world at this moment. So at the time of birth, when you draw your first breath, that's when the tie that cords, that's the tie that ties you to the body, to the spirit, to the body. That's a critical time. Now, I think conception probably has a similar kind of explanation to it, too. And probably the death. Time of death and date of death. For the soul. Well, I'll probably be talking about this many more times and doing some study of it. You know, I always, in my own way of studying this, I have to always compare it to Mother's teachings on it. And where she leaves off, I kind of get, I lose interest. But that there's some great ideas here, I think it's unmistakable. We can benefit from it. So we're an hour and 10 minutes in, so I think we'll this was my desire to open up this Wednesday time period that Mother used to do. And to have some kind of, I know Jill's doing a great deal of stuff, and so is Peter, but it's nice to have in memory of Mother Wednesdays and Sundays. So almost exactly 3.5 days between the two. Very interesting. Halfway through the week. So please join me in Mother's closing prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am he. Om. 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 Peace, bliss, Amen.